scripture? This. When Naomi heard in Moab that the Lord had come to the aid of his people by providing food for them, she and her daughters-in-law prepared to return home from there. With her two daughters-in-law, she left that place where she had been where they had been living, and set out for the road that would take them back to the land of Jordan. Then Naomi said to her daughters-in-law,
"Go back, each of you. Go back to your mother's home. May the Lord show you kindness, as you have shown kindness to your dead husbands and to me. May the Lord grant that each of you will find peace with another husband."
Then she kissed them goodbye, and they wept aloud and said to her,
"We will go back with you to your people."
"Return home, my daughters. Why come with me? Am I going to have any more sons that can become your husbands? Return home, my daughters. I'm too old. Even if I thought it was possible, if I had a husband tonight and gave birth to sons, would you wait for them to grow? Would remain unmarried all that time for them? No, 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 my daughters. This is too bitter for me. It must go home. The Lord's hand has turned against me."
At this, they wept aloud again, and Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, but Ruth clung to her.
"Look, your sister's going back. Go back to your people and your gods. Go home.
Don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if even death separates me from you."
When Naomi realized that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped urging her. So Naomi returned from Moab, accompanied by Ruth the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, arriving in Bethlehem as the barley harvest was beginning.
Story. When I was a little girl, my hopes and dreams were quite simple. All I wanted to do was to grow up, marry a kind man, and have at least one son who would have at least one son, and then our family line would be secure for the foreseeable future. Simple. Not much of a dream, but it was good enough for me. I was just a young Israelite girl growing up in Bethlehem, not long after we entered this land of promise. I'd heard the stories of my ancestors wandering in the wilderness, living in tents and eating manna. So settling down in a proper house with fields, a well and a vineyard, husband and sons, seemed like paradise to me. When I was born, my parents called me Naomi. Pleasant. It's quite a name to live up to. Even when I feel like being grumpy or moody, as soon as someone calls my name, "Pleasant, Naomi," it's a bit difficult to be unpleasant, isn't it? So I learned to do kind things, to say kind things, to try and be cheerful, and try to keep going even when life was tough. You know, these have been really important lessons in my life, in a world where dreams break often and easily, and where my only worth as a woman is living long enough to produce at least one son. And if I survive that, maybe more. My parents chose Elimelech to be my husband. Elimelech means "my God is kind." Interesting that. So my God is kind, married Pleasant, and it should have been the perfect formula for a fairy tale. But life wasn't as kind and pleasant as we imagined. Eventually we had two sons, well, two who survived childhood. At first, I was overjoyed to find myself with child, even happier when the midwife told me I had a son. But we soon realized something was wrong. He wasn't a strong baby. He didn't flourish. He was sick. There were so many times he nearly died, and I stayed up all night holding him close, feeding him by drops, praying with all my heart and willing him to live. And every morning that I woke and found him still alive, I had hope that he might live long enough to father a son of his own, and my purpose would be complete. Caring for him took every ounce of my energy, my emotion, my spirit, even sometimes my love. It stretched my kindness, my pleasantness, my patience, my faith to their extremes. And then another pregnancy, and I prayed so hard that this child would be healthy and well. And it was a son, another son, but we soon noticed the telltale signs of the disease in his body too, just like his brother. The same strange sickness, the weakness, the muscle wasting, more long nights nursing sick babies, facing my worst fears. I raged and I ranted at God. All I ever prayed for was one healthy son. How hard was that? And almost all the other mothers around me had perfectly healthy children and hordes of them. And so my perfect dream of a family was fractured. We managed to keep them alive, our two fragile sons. We called them Marlon and Chilion. Their names mean sickness and wasting. I know, they're strange names to call your children, but it was a way to help people know that they were fragile. They were vulnerable, part of their protection. It was an instant message not to expect too much. And then the famine came. It was hard enough to keep the two of them nourished in good times, and the famine was the final straw. We longed to stay in the safety of Bethlehem with our beloved family and our friends. But once the crops failed again and again, we ran out of resources. We had to find the nearest place where the crops were still flourishing, and that was Moab. Our fractured family was running low on hope and options, and this was a life and death choice. And so we took the risk of traveling painfully, slowly along the dangerous road to Moab with two weak children and very little food. We were grasping at desperate straws for our only chance of survival. We made it to Moab. It's an uncomfortable and distressing place to be as refugees. Their laws, their culture was totally different to ours. The child sacrifices, they sickened me to the heart. I would do anything to keep my two boys alive. They were so precious to me, even though they were weak and fragile, and these people were destroying their beautiful, healthy children. Every day I saw things that troubled me in Moab and made me long for the safety of our little community in Bethlehem, where we worshipped and served a God of love who cares deeply about us and our children. But eventually we settled into life in Moab and we looked for ways to be a blessing to the community, even though we had so little. We settled in the strange land and Elimelech was able to do some work. We had a little bit of land, some sheep and some chickens, enough to get by and feed our growing sons. I always hoped that they would grow stronger as they grew older, but that didn't happen. Over the years, we faced fresh new challenges as their strange illness developed. And even when the famine in Bethlehem had faded into memories, the journey back home was too strenuous for them. And so my Elimelech was failing too. He wasn't strong enough to walk back there and bring back a couple of lovely Jewish girls. And who would want to come anyway? Who would send their daughters to live in Moab and be their wives of sickly husbands who might have an inherited illness? It wasn't a great prospect. So my dreams were shattered again. There would be no lovely Jewish daughters-in-law and little Jewish grandchildren. But we had to get our sons married as soon as we possibly could, right there in Moab, in the hopes that one of them might have a child. And every day I looked out for the best Moabite girls I could find. I watched at the well at the town square, looking for the kindest ones, the girls who cheerfully helped other people without even being asked, who hauled up the well bucket for the old lady with twisted hands, who helped me carry my shopping home from the market, the girls who were cheerful and sweet, even when I knew their lives were difficult, the girls who didn't flinch from hard work or suffering. If there was one thing I'd learnt in my life with Elimelech and from watching other families, it was the importance of choosing a kind spouse. So I found Ruthah and Orpah, lovely young girls, gentle, kind, caring, perfect to care for our fragile and sickly sons. And so our lives blended together. We worked together in the home, we took care of each other. In the evenings, we would sit around the fire, and I would tell the stories of my people, the stories of my God. And as I did so, I realized that every single family had fractured dreams. Not the same broken dreams as ours, but things like deceit, bitter conflict, abuse, poverty, oppression, jealousy, sibling rivalry, favoritism, selling a brother into slavery, or even murdering him. I came to enjoy our family life together. Ruth and Orpah shared my heavy load. They learned how to care for their husbands, and we grew closer. We worked alongside each other, fetching water, baking bread, scrubbing laundry. We laughed and we cried together. Ruth and Orpah were the precious daughters I had never had. I longed to hear the news that one of them had conceived. They would bear a child, but that news never came. And then tragedy trampled over tragedy. First, my dearest husband died. Elimelech, he had been my strength, my love, my joy, my support, my protection. And as he breathed his final breath in my arms, my dreams broke again in a place I hadn't anticipated so soon. In my dreams, we would live together to a ripe old age with grandchildren and even great-grandchildren playing and laughing around our feet. And so my world ripped apart. My heart bled, and together we cried and mourned the loss of someone who could never be replaced. And just when I thought my dreams had fractured into as many pieces as possible, Marlon and Chilean became weaker, both of them. And we watched their lives disintegrate. We nursed them as best they could, but this time their needs were beyond my skill. I was helpless. My prayers became desperate. For Marlon and Chilean, it was the last straw. We just held them close as they slipped out of life and into death. Now I had no husbands. I had no sons, no grandsons, no hope, no future. As a woman, I was nothing. I had nothing. All of my broken dreams had disintegrated. I just wanted to curl up and die so we could all be buried in Moab, and that would be the end of everything. Our family line, our inheritance, our lives, they would just be fractured into forgottenness and obliterated forever. Ruth and Orpah, they were crushed too. And again, we cried and mourned. We buried our loved ones. We cried some more, but this time at a deeper level, a more frantic level. We had lost more than our irreplaceable loved ones. We were all alone. And we were vulnerable widows in a cruel world that was not kind to women without men, especially not in Moab. So my heart shuddered with the earth-shattering pain of loss and the strangling fear at how we might be exploited. This was no fairy tale ending. This was the stuff of nightmares. We cried, we mourned, I prayed, or I tried to pray, but my prayers had no words. They were just feelings and longings and pain and tears dumped at the feet of God in a basket of shreds. I just asked for one thing in my life. My dream wasn't some kind of spectacular fantasy. I didn't want to be a princess in a palace. I just wanted to see one son, have one son. That was all the dream I ever wanted. So I ranted and I raged at my God, the God who loves children and blesses families but had taken them all from me, or so I thought. There was nothing left for me in Moab. Ruth and Orpah were still young. Their families were nearby. They could still dream and hope and find new husbands. But now it was a time for me to pick up my few pieces and carry my tiny world back to my people in Bethlehem. The day I left, Ruth and Orpah clung to me. They walked along the road with me for a while, silently, not wanting to say goodbye. Our shared losses had bound our hearts together, but I had no future to offer them. No husband, no sons, no money, just a dangerous walk through the wilderness into the poverty and vulnerability of widowhood. So Orpah reluctantly let go, and she walked back to her family in Moab. But Ruth lingered. Don't force me to leave you. Don't make me go home. Where you go, I go. Where you live, I'll live. Your people will be my people. Your God is my God. And where you die, I'll die. And that's where I'll be buried. So help me, God. Not even death itself is going to come between us. Wow. Such courageous love. Such beautiful words. They brought tears to my eyes and healing to my heart. Even though I had blamed God for my suffering, Ruth loved and trusted the God that she had discovered through me. Maybe the flickering flame of her faith could reignite the smoldering wick of mine. So we arrived back in Bethlehem. My little house was still there. It was very dusty and it was in need of some repair. But it was still a safe and welcoming place to rest after the long journey. But I was not the sweet and pleasant Naomi that left 10 years ago. I called myself Mara instead because I was bitter and hurting and grieving and raging. We'd gone to Moab to save our sons, and we may as well have stayed here in Bethlehem for all the good it did, because I never got to see one son have one son. My friends gathered around, and we caught up with the news of the last 10 years, the births, the deaths, the marriages, the scandals, the joys, the disappointments, the struggles to survive, the financial challenges, and slowly I realized that everyone's dreams had been broken in some way or another, and now some of them were slowly mending. New relationships, new babies, new hopes, new possibilities, and some of their stories were being retold in fresh ways, with unexpected twists and turns in the narrative, as they looked back and could see God's hand of loving kindness working his way through their pain. Maybe somehow there would even be an unexpected twist in my own story. I introduced them to Ruth. I was a little hesitant at first. I mean, how would they respond to this young Moabite girl from a strange country with a strange religion? I told them about her sweet and generous kindness to me and our family, and her incredible courage to come with me on this long journey home. I told them of her desire to be part of my community, my nation. I told them of her lifelong commitment to me. We had nothing when we arrived in Bethlehem, no money, no food, except what our kind and generous friends gave to us. So Ruth, bless her heart, decided to glean amongst the harvest, gathering grain for us to grind and eat. You know, it takes humility to glean. It's a job for the very poorest, but she was more than willing to go so she could care for me. And God was with us both as she set off to glean. He guided Ruth to a field owned by Boaz. I'd always admired him. He was one of my husband's relatives. He was a good man. He was known for his kindness, his generosity, and his respect for everybody. And he had a special compassion for foreigners and vulnerable women because his own mother was Rahab from Jericho, and she had welcomed the Israelite spies into her home and kept them safe, and her generous hospitality had saved her entire family. Even in the harvest field, Boaz was hospitable. As soon as he saw Ruth at work, he welcomed her, said, stay in my field so I can protect you. And he told his men not to bother her, told her to drink from the workers' water jars. Ruth was so surprised that a rich and noble man would treat her with such gentleness and respect. Why are you being so kind to me? I'm just a foreigner, she said. Because I've heard how kind you have been to your mother-in-law, he said. You even left your own family to take care of her and come and live in this strange place among strange people. May God reward you for what you have done and protect you and bless you. Ruth had never heard such kind words from a man she didn't know. And then he invited her to share lunch with his workers and gave her more than she needed so she could bring some home for me, along with a large basket full of grain. The pain of my losses was beginning to heal. Of course, I would always be sad when I remembered my beloved husband and my sons. A part of my heart will always be broken for them. But something else was happening. My shattered dreams were being healed by the loving kindness of God, the warm generosity of my friends in my time of utter destitution, by the courageous commitment of Ruth and the incredible kindness of Boaz. I was glad I had come back to Bethlehem, to this place I could call home, and that smoking wick of my hope began to flicker once again into a flame. I started to notice the good things that God was doing to show me his love, the blessings, the comfort, the joys. And Ruth was my biggest blessing. She was a gift from God discovered in the unlikely place of a Moabite market square. Her love and her laughter helped me through those dark times. I had asked for one son who would give me one son, but in his love, God had given me a daughter. She always had a smile. She worked cheerfully from morning to night. She brought home the grain and leftovers from her lunch. She picked flowers to brighten our plain little house. The water jars were always full. She never complained about missing her family or wanting to go back to Moab. And I loved her as if she were my own. I wondered how I could bless Ruth. She was young. She needed someone to love and protect her. She needed to produce an heir for Mahlon, her husband. And the greatest gift I could give to Ruth would be to find her a husband. So I looked around, as we do in our culture, for the closest family member to my husband. And of course, there was Boaz. He'd already noticed Ruth. I mean, who wouldn't? She was young and pretty and sparkling with life. And she had noticed him, even though he was much older, because he had treated her with kindness and respect. So I came up with a plan, and we used a strange and ancient ritual where a woman can show her interest in a man, even in our culture. I must admit, Ruth was a little bewildered by the procedure, but she trusted me and went along with my suggestions. And even though there was a closer relative who could have married Ruth, Boaz worked everything out in their favor. So Ruth was married to Boaz at the end of the harvest. It was a wonderful celebration. And as my friend said at the wedding, Ruth was such a blessing that she was worth more than 7 sons. And I tell you, that's the highest compliment anyone could ever pay to a young foreign widow who had given up everything in her world to follow and love her mother-in-law. And so here I am today, nursing newborn baby Obed, the son of Moabite Ruth and Boaz, whose mother was Rahab. He is chubby, he's robust, he's feisty, he has strong little legs and loud little lungs, and God is rewriting my broken dream into something more wonderful than I could ever imagine. With this brand new grandchild, I have not seen one son, but I have seen one unexpected daughter have one very special son, and that is enough for me. It wasn't the dream I had in mind, but it is truly a more wonderful love story than I could ever have imagined or written. Maybe God is using this baby, this process, to heal our family from the sickness of my sons, strengthening it through the lines of Ruth and Boaz to create something that will endure forever. And who knows what stories will be told by Obed and the future generations as they live out their dreams of God. Because I have started to notice the great things God is doing here and now, the everyday blessings in our family, the little things that are helping to mend the hurts, and I know that God will do even greater things in the future. You know, who knows? Maybe there will even be kings and queens in our family, great men and women who will make a difference in the world, and who knows, maybe even the Messiah. And as I look back on my life now, I'm older and wiser, and I can see more clearly the loving hand of God weaving his patterns, making everything beautiful in his time. And even through my deepest tragedies, he was always there. He was working in wonderful ways that I didn't even notice or recognize because they didn't fit with my dream script. But God took all those broken pieces and rewrote them into his grand story for my family, for my life, and for eternity. And I've learned some important lessons through my life of broken dreams. Be kind to others, because it always comes back to you in kindness, and usually in greater measure than we give it. It returns to us pressed down and overflowing. No kindness is ever wasted or unnoticed by God. It always brings a blessing to the world and joy to his heart when we are kind like him. And build a network of caring people. Even one caring person, like Ruth or Boaz, can make a huge difference when our world falls apart. Life is unpredictable and painful, so be there to comfort one another when their dreams shatter. Don't walk past those who are struggling. Reach out and care and help their stories to find new meanings and new endings. Plan ahead for the life events you can expect and develop patience and resilience for the catastrophes you can't predict. Because most families are at least a little fractured from living in a fractured world, and the story of any fractured family doesn't end where we think it does. It goes beyond us to find meaning in eternity. So look for where God is working to mend things and join him there. And remember that some stories will not make sense until we can turn around and look back at them. And some of them won't make sense till the end of time, when all our brokenness will be mended by God's love and forgiveness, and all our hearts will be made whole by his kindness, and when all our tears will be wiped away by his comforting hands. And then all our broken dreams will come together, ultimately mended and beautiful in his eternal love story. Amen.